Hello, it's Monday the 4th of July. Welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-woo. The deadlock at the National Assembly has been broken, with rival parties agreeing on terms over electing a new parliamentary speaker and formation of parliamentary committees. We'll have more details in news briefing shortly. In light of the US Supreme Court overturning abortion rights last month, we'll discuss the uncertain answer to "Is abortion legal in South Korea?" for our in-depth today. And then coming up on Monday's Sports Roundup, we look at the latest in the K-League title race and the lineup that was announced today for the KBO All-Star Game. Let's begin. Korea 24. Korean politics has been shaken up by two major developments that have finally put Parliament back on track and move the cabinet closer to completion. For more on these stories and the rest of the day's headlines, our KBS World Radio news editor, Jenny Na, has joined us now in the studio. Jenny, hello.
Hello, Jang-han.
So we begin with news that rival political parties have reached a breakthrough compromise, breaking a month-long deadlock in negotiations over electing a new speaker and forming standing committees. So how did the agreement come about?
Well, the main opposition Democratic Party decided to accept a proposal from the ruling People Power Party to cooperate in electing the speaker if the DP reciprocated with a bipartisan agreement to elect committee chairs. Party wrangling has essentially kept Parliament in stasis for more than a month. With its parliamentary majority, the DP had considered unilaterally electing the speaker by convening an extraordinary session this month. And then, hours before the session was set to start earlier this afternoon, the PPP suggested the compromise on electing the speaker and the committee chairs.
Okay, so they finally elected a new National Assembly speaker. What can you tell us about him?
Kim Jin-pyo is a five-term lawmaker from the Democratic Party who is known for his economic expertise. He served as a vice finance minister and finance minister under Presidents Kim Dae-jung and Noh Mi-hyun, among other key government posts. He was elected with 255 votes out of 275, and he will lead the second half of the 21st National Assembly until May 2024. After the election, Kim called for a swift agreement on committee formation and cabinet member confirmation hearings.
And that brings us to the next of two major developments today. President Yoon Suk-yeol has approved the appointments of the nominees for Education Minister and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff after his health minister nominee resigned. Can you tell us more?
Yes, let's start with a look at the cabinet nominees. Education Minister nominee Park Sun-hae, who doubles as Deputy Prime Minister, and JCS Chairman nominee Kim Sung-kyum were appointed without confirmation hearings. Now, as we mentioned earlier, this comes amid that prolonged vacuum in Parliament that got a break today. Yoon also nominated Song Ok-yal, a professor at the Seoul National University Law School, as the new head of the Fair Trade Commission. Song, who received training alongside Yoon after passing the state bar exam, is a renowned academic in commercial law. Meanwhile, Yoon asked the Assembly to hand over a confirmation hearing report for Financial Services Commission Chairman nominee Kim Joo-hyun.
This all comes after Health Minister nominee Kim Seung-hee withdrew her nomination in the face of allegations of political fund violations. What can you tell us about the charges against her, Jenny?
Well, Kim is accused of spending political funds for her own personal use when she was a lawmaker during the 20th National Assembly. That's a violation of the Political Funds Act, and the National Election Commission is currently investigating the charge. Now, in a statement on Monday, Kim said that although she had repeatedly denied the allegations based on objective facts, her reputation as a public official has been damaged and her family hurt in the process. She said no political funds were used for personal reasons and that the problem was caused by an accounting error. Kim said that, as the one in charge of management, she will accept responsibility for what happened and resigned. Kim's resignation comes 39 days after President Yoon Suk-yeol announced her nomination. Yoon's first health minister nominee, Chung O-young, stepped down in May amid favoritism allegations surrounding his children.
Okay, let's move on now to one of many long-standing issues between South Korea and Japan. Korea is set to explore ways to provide compensation for the Korean victims of Japan's wartime forced labor. So what are they planning to do?
The government launched a public-private council to discuss the issue. The first meeting of the council was to be held today behind closed doors. The meeting would reportedly be attended by government officials, experts, and representatives of the forced labor victims. The launch of the council comes after Korean courts ordered two Japanese firms, Mitsubishi Heavy Industries and Nippon Steel Corporation, to sell their assets in Korea to compensate people forced to work for the companies during World War II. The final ruling from the Supreme Court on liquidation of assets is expected in August or September. Relations between Seoul and Tokyo have frayed over the issue, with Japan demanding that Korea resolve the issue.
Well, hopefully we'll see some movement on that issue soon. On another front, business leaders from Korea and Japan have resumed their annual meeting for the first time in 3 years. What can you tell us about that?
The meeting was first launched in 1982 to promote mutual understanding and friendship. It was started by the Federation of Korean Industries and the Japan Business Federation, and they came back together on Monday after a two-year suspension due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Participants discussed bilateral economic trends and cooperation to realize a sustainable society, and specifically, they addressed abolishing export curbs and reintroducing visa-free systems between the two countries. The FKI also sought Tokyo's support for Seoul's membership to the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership. In a joint declaration, they agreed to uphold the spirit of Seoul and Tokyo's joint declaration of 1998 between former President Kim Dae-jung and former Japanese Prime Minister Kaizo Obuchi in developing future-oriented relations.
Moving on, we're having a heat wave here in Korea, and amid the soaring temperatures, the nation's electricity demand hit a record high in June. So what are the figures there?
Well, thanks to the tropical conditions we've been having, the maximum power demand averaged 71,805 megawatts in June, up 4.3% from a year earlier. Now, according to the Korea Power Exchange, that's the largest tally for the month of June since 2005, when the nation started compiling related data. It also marks the first time that the June figures surpassed 70,000 megawatts. Now, with the rise in electricity demand, the country's power reserves dipped below 10% for the first time this year to post 9.5% on June 23rd. According to the Energy Ministry, maximum electricity demand this summer is expected to peak around the second week of August, reaching 91.7 to 95.7 gigawatts, a range that is higher than last year's 91.1.
Looking more specifically at the weather, we had flagged last week that a typhoon was on the way, but it sounds like we're not getting any relief from the heat wave now in the next couple of days. Can you give us the latest?
That's right. Forecasters say that Korea will see an extension in the scorching heat wave blanketing the country as Typhoon Eari is forecast to veer toward Japan. The typhoon will keep the sweltering heat and high humidity here at least until Wednesday, with most of the nation experiencing blistering temperatures of over 30 degrees Celsius. Heatwave warnings are being expanded nationwide, especially after the cities of Seoul and Daegu saw temperatures of up to 35 degrees Celsius during the day on Monday. With the high temperatures and humidity readings, health authorities are also issuing warnings against heat-related illnesses, such as heat stroke. And the number of patients reporting heat stroke between May 20th and July 2nd was 355, which is more than double the number during the same period last year.
And finally, let's get an update on the COVID-19 situation here in South Korea. Can you give us the latest numbers?
Yes. New COVID-19 cases in Korea fell to 6,253 on Monday, but increased by some 2,800 from a week ago. That includes 164 cases from overseas. The daily case count is a drop of about 3,800 from the day before due to fewer tests over the weekend, but it's the largest number for Monday tallies in 6 weeks. The number of critically or seriously ill patients increased by 3 from a day ago to 56, and 4 additional deaths were reported in the past 24 hours.
That's where we wrap up our news briefing today. Thank you for those updates.
You're welcome.
Following the US Supreme Court's controversial decision to overturn abortion rights last month, here in South Korea, attention is being drawn to our own situation, particularly because the simple question, is abortion illegal in Korea, does not have a clear answer. Back in 2019, South Korea's Constitutional Court ruled that an outright ban on abortion is unconstitutional and called for legislative change. However, 3 years on, public confusion remains as no new related laws have been introduced. For an overview on this issue today, we are joined on the line by reporter Kim Marin from the Korea Herald. Ms. Kim, thank you for being on the show today.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So for the benefit of our listeners, could you first give us a brief history of abortion law in South Korea?
The ban on abortion in South Korea began during the Japanese colonial era, and then it persisted for a very long time in Korea. Until very recently, abortion was punishable under the laws that were amended in 1995. Under those laws, women could face up to a year in jail or 2 million won in fine for getting an abortion. And physicians who perform abortion could face up to 5 years jail time. But in the 1950s and 1960s, the South Korean government encouraged couples to have fewer children. And during those times, abortion was kind of condoned culturally and by authorities while maintaining that illegal status. Then 3 years ago in April 2019, Korea's Constitutional Court ruled that the ban on abortion was unconstitutional, and abortion is no longer considered a crime in Korea.
Right, so essentially South Korea's Constitutional Court decriminalized abortion. Can you explain more about this ruling? How did the Constitutional Court come to this decision? What was the reasoning behind it?
Our constitutional court said that the ban was unconstitutional on the grounds that it violated women's rights to bodily autonomy far too greatly. The court at the time viewed that the ban imposed disproportionate burden on women, and it also the court also mentioned that pregnancies were leading to the possibility of pregnancies leading to disruptions in women's employment and education. But it's important to note that the court did not say that the abortion should be allowed all throughout the pregnancy. The court said that very specifically, it was up to 22 weeks of pregnancy that the abortion should be allowed, before which point the fetus cannot survive outside the woman's body.
So the court essentially said it's the early stages of pregnancy where abortion should be allowed and should be decriminalized. So the Constitutional Court ruled that in 2019. However, that doesn't paint the whole picture in South Korea. Ms. Kim, what is the current legal status of abortions in South Korea?
Yes, South Korea is kind of in a limbo in terms of abortion's legal status. Abortion still has not been fully legalized. It still awaits an act of the National Assembly. Although abortion became decriminalized last year after a deadline set by the Constitutional Court had passed, it's still not officially been legalized because the National Assembly has not passed the related laws. In fact, last week, the Ministry of Health and Welfare releasing the first set of statistics on the state of abortion in Korea. that there are no legal grounds to punish abortion per se here, but there are still no laws that support abortion rights for women. The National Assembly has not yet taken action to neither punish nor support the right to end pregnancy in South Korea.
Right. So when this ruling came in 2019, it said that related laws need to be revised by the end of 2020, but that hasn't happened. In other words, although abortion may no longer be a crime in Korea, it's still not recognized as a legal procedure, therefore is not covered by any sort of health insurance. It's unclear where you can get it done. There are no records of even how many or how safely the procedure is being performed. And it's basically going unchecked under the government. So we're in the situation now. National Assembly has yet to pass new bills. What are the main problems caused by the lack of new laws clarifying the situation? Can you explain a bit more?
Because it's neither legal nor illegal, women are turning to unsafe methods to terminate their pregnancy. According to an online survey conducted by a research institute under the South Korean government, women who were included in the survey responded that the main medium through which they gained the information about abortion was on the internet. So they would have trouble finding out which clinics offer these services and which do not, and then also clinics are also not legally obligated to offer these services to patients who might be in need. So it's not safe for women who are getting the abortion, and also the clinics and the physicians who are carrying out these procedures face certain risks. So the legal situation is very muddled, and it's exposing women to a lot of risk.
Sure, it's exposing women to a dangerous situation, which means nothing has really changed since before 2019, when it was illegal. But it has been decriminalized. It made a headline news, of course. How has that ruling affected the overall situation in Korea? You've mentioned this recent government survey. I believe it was conducted by the Korea Institute for Health and Social Affairs. What did it show?
So this is the first survey to have been conducted after abortion was decriminalized in Korea. And then this survey included 8,500 women aged between 15 to 49 years. And the survey, I think the most important thing to note from this survey is that the procedure was decriminalized, did not lead to the number of abortions increasing in Korea. So I think a lot of critics of the Constitutional Court's ruling have worried that decriminalizing abortion will lead to more abortions taking place in Korea, but this survey showed that that was not what happened in the first year at least. Another thing that this survey demonstrated was that women are, like I said in my previous response, women are turning to use drugs rather than surgery to end their pregnancy, which is considered more dangerous here, because none of these drugs are legal in Korea. None of the drugs have been approved or been legalized in Korea, and so this is a worrying trend that's been noted by the recent survey. And also the cost of getting an abortion, the survey showed that the cost of getting an abortion has risen than compared to the last survey that took place before abortion was decriminalized in 2018. So despite abortion no longer being a crime in Korea, women who seek abortion are still resorting to unsafe methods, and they're not getting the services safely as they should. And when they announced this survey, the Ministry of Health and Welfare, they clearly they made it clear that the National Assembly should, you know, take action to make this procedure legal and safe for women, and both women and the physicians who are performing the procedure.
Sure. So there is a need for clarity and legislation to come in, as ordered by the Constitutional Court. But I do understand that there are bills currently pending at the National Assembly. A total of 6 bills, I understand, are currently pending. Can you tell us more about some of these bills and what's preventing them from being passed?
I've spoken to some constitutional law scholars in Korea, and they've told me that one of the main reasons that the laws are pending in the National Assembly might be that, unlike the Constitutional Court, the lawmakers face pressures from the public, and so they might be less willing to pass controversial laws that might affect, you know, their, you know, approval or their chances at their next election.
Despite the Constitutional Court's ruling, it's still a sensitive topic with some members of the public, perhaps certain interest groups who are against these changes. Do we know what the Union administration's stance on the issues related to abortion are? Can we expect any sort of pressure from the current administration to push this through?
The opposition, some of the opposition lawmakers on the Health and Welfare Committee on the National Assembly have said that they would take action to finally pass these bills into law. Two of them are Kwon Min-suk and Nam In-sun. They are two lawmakers on the Health and Welfare Committee and the National Assembly. And, I don't think the current administration has made their stance clear on where they stand on abortion. But while they were still, while Yoon Suk-yeol was still a candidate, well, he has said that protecting life were a very important issue in our society, and the low birth rate in the country is a very serious problem in South Korea. So protecting the lives of unborn babies was related to the existence of our country as a nation. We can infer that he wasn't fully supportive of women's rights to choose. But since then, we haven't seen any progress in terms of, you know, whether this administration is committed to having that constitutional court ruling becoming realized and, you know.
Sure. So it seems even with President Yoon, the situation is quite murky on where he stands on this issue. But it seems like it is perhaps time for legislation to be formed around that landmark ruling for the safety of the women especially. But it still remains a sensitive topic, as we said, and we'll see if there will be movements on it coming soon. Meanwhile, we'll have to wrap it up there. We've been speaking to reporter Kim Arin from the Korea Herald. Ms. Kim, thank you for being on the show today.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index fell 5.08 points or 0.22% on Monday, closing the day at 2,300.34. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also fell, losing 6.75 points or 0.93% to close at 722.73. On the foreign exchange, the local currency strengthened 0.21 against the dollar, ending the day at 1,297.11. You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
Welcome back, and we carry on now to Korea Trending, our daily segment looking at some of the other news stories that have been trending online. And for that, we have joining us in the studio today, Walter Lee. Walter, hello. It's good to see you.
Hello, Jang-ha. It's always good to see you.
Okay, so what stories do you have for us today?
Okay, so first we'll explore the South Korean government's new pilot program, which encourages workers around the country to take sick leave. Then we'll discuss the serious problem of love bug infestations in and around Seoul. And finally, we'll talk about why the popular YouTuber Park Mang-re is losing tens of thousands of subscribers a day.
Okay, so let's get into those stories, starting with that government pilot program. Can you tell us more?
South Korea started a paid sick leave pilot program in certain areas across the country on Monday as a way to foster social conditions that encourage sick leave, given its growing importance in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, the Ministry of Health and Welfare announced on Sunday that it would pilot the program in six regions, including Pohang, North Gyeongsang Province, Changwon, South Gyeongsang Province, and Seoul's Jongno District. The sick pay is set at 43,961 per day. It's roughly about $33, which is 60% of this year's minimum wage.
Right, and this has also come in light of the fact that South Korea is one of only two OECD countries to not have a nationwide paid sick leave policy, the other being the United States. So can you tell us more about this pilot program? You said it'll be taking place in six regions. Who is eligible?
So those eligible for the benefits include workers between 15 and 65 years of age living in the pilot project areas. However, workers for one of the 105 businesses designated by the National Health Insurance Service can apply for the program regardless of where they reside. It also includes self-employed workers, artists with employment insurance, and daily wage earners, among others. There are a few exceptions, however. Those who receive certain government benefits, such as unemployment or maternity leave, government workers, and school staff are not eligible for the program.
And what kind of illnesses or injuries are covered by the program?
Well, there are no restrictions on the type of injury or disease, except for a few cases, such as cosmetic surgery for non-medical purposes. Applicants must have a diagnosis issued by one of the 223 local medical organizations for 15,001, roughly $11, before submission. The money will then be reimbursed once applicants have been approved. Now, the pilot program will operate for 1 year, and the government plans to fully introduce the program in 2025 after completing multiple trials.
Yes, according to a government survey, only 46% of employees said they took paid sick leave last year. And we have to remember that is during a global pandemic as well. So a major change in the Korean work welfare system has begun with this pilot program that launched today. Let's move on to our next story. What do you have for us?
Yes, Seoul and metropolitan areas have been seeing an infestation of Plesia neartica, or love bugs, this year. Residents in Eunpyeong and Seodaemun districts in Seoul and Goyang City in Gyeonggi Province are reporting inconveniences from swarms of these bugs in the area. Calls asking for the bugs' extermination are flooding in at district offices, community centres and public health centres, disrupting employees for their regular tasks.
Right, the reason they are called love bugs is because they're often seen in pairs and often while mating. So that's also a sign of how fast they can multiply. Now, a lot of listeners might be familiar with these bugs as they are a species common in parts of the US and Central America. and understand that while they are a nuisance, they're not harmful, Walter, right?
Yeah, that's right. So love bugs are a species of March fly and are just under 1 centimeter in length. They do not bite nor carry diseases and are known to be beneficial to the environment, playing a part in adding nutrients to the soil. However, they do travel in groups, seem to have no fear of humans, often flying towards them rather than away, and there are reports of these bugs flying into homes and sticking to people.
Right, so not dangerous, but still a nuisance.
Yes.
Do we know why we're seeing so many of them in Korea this year?
Well, the exact causes aren't known yet, but there are a few factors that might have contributed to the rise in numbers. Now, love bugs tend to appear in humid and mountainous areas and tend to die off in dry and sunny weather. However, the rainy weather we had at the end of June, which is their mating season, contributed to the growth in population. And spraying pesticides during rainy weather is ineffective, so the district offices and public health centres missed the window when they could keep the population under control. The female love bug can also lay up to 350 eggs at one time, adding to the concerns that the infestation may spread throughout Seoul.
Yes, there are already people in Korea posting online about how an infestation is in their homes, already causing problems, with some saying they're too worried to open the windows. And also, of course, children being too scared of them as well. What is there being done to tackle this problem then?
Well, due to the drastic rise of the bugs, the Eunpyeong District Public Health Center is carrying out emergency extermination efforts by mobilizing its own groups in each neighborhood. It has been advised that people wear dark clothes and close their curtains at night as love bugs respond to bright colors and lights. Citizens have also been warned to take care of the gaps in their windows and screens as the bugs are able to pass through.
Okay, let's move on to our final trending story. What else has been trending today?
Yes. So popular South Korean YouTuber Park Mangre saw more than 30,000 people unsubscribe to her channel, which is Korea Grandma, over the weekend after news of her granddaughter's engagement. The channel had recorded 1.36 million subscribers last Friday before the news of the engagement was shared.
Yes, she is a very popular figure. And she still has quite a lot of subscribers, but still, losing 30,000 people is quite a noticeable drop.
Mm-hmm.
And you said it was over her granddaughter's engagement. Mm-hmm. Why has that upset fans?
Well, controversy surrounding the fiancé of Yura PD, the granddaughter of the manager of Park's channel, surfaced after the announcement. Posts containing sexual comments or visual depictions that her fiancé had posted on social media in the past came under fire in various internet communities. A t-shirt designed by the fiancé's clothing company in collaboration with a popular local artist in 2015 was also criticised for its depiction of what seems to be a sexual assault by multiple assailants. And after these posts came to light, Park's channel saw an exodus of its subscribers, who are mainly women in their 20s and 30s as a result of their disappointment.
Right, so the granddaughter wasn't just a granddaughter, she was someone directly responsible for this channel.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people do not want to be in a position where they feel they are supporting someone like her fiancé directly. Has there been any response from those involved in this matter?
Well, Yura PD stated on an online community on Sunday that she is not trying to defend her fiancé, but he probably thought that he was being somewhat witty at the time of the posting, which dates back to 8 years ago. She added that everyone is well aware now that it would be inappropriate to make a post or something of such comments, but said that having met her fiancé after that period, she knows that there is more to him than just the past image alone. However, there were no comments made by Park Mangde herself.
Okay, we'll leave it there for today's Career Trending. Thank you for bringing us those stories, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
We continue on now to our weekly segment, Monday Sports Roundup, where we find the latest sporting headlines from Korea. And joining me on the line for that is none other than Yoo Ji-ho, sports reporter for the Yonhap News Agency. Ji-ho, hello. It's good to have you with us, as always.
Yeah, it's great to be here, as always, too.
So we start with K-League football, where once again, Ulsan Hyundai FC are dropping points and Jeonbuk Hyundai are catching up to them in the table. Ulsan, the perennial runners-up, it seems, in the K-League, only have a 5-point lead in the table now after they lost to the Pohang Steelers in their regional derby on Saturday. Tumbuk, meanwhile, beat Kimchan Sangmu FC the same evening. Jiho, we've seen this story before, haven't we?
Yeah, this script is all too familiar, I think, if you're following K-League the last three, 4 seasons now. You know, if you recall, at the end of May, with teams going into international break in the K-League, Jumbo were not even in the top three. Wilson were leading by 11 points, and second place were in, you know, Jeju United were in second place. Jumbo kind of struggling in fourth place. But in a span of 4 matches since the resumption of the season, Jumbo have cut the deficit to just 5 points. They rarely passed Kimchan 2-1 on Saturday. Wilson getting blanked by Pohang 2-0 in their latest East Coast derby there. So Wilson leading early, faltering down the stretch in each of the past 3 years, and Jumbo claiming the titles with the late season rally. Again, this is all too familiar, especially if you're a fan of, I think, Wilson. This is kind of the deja vu all over again, playing out right in front of their eyes. And I think the one consolation for Wilson fans, if they're aggrieved, this is still relatively early in the season. The teams have just reached exactly halfway point of the 38-match season. The 5-point lead is probably not as large as their fans would have liked at this point, especially given the way Wilson began the season. But you know what? Again, there's still a lot of season left. And Wilson had one loss before the break. They've dropped 2 out of 4 since then. They're playing Gangwon FC Tuesday night, and hopefully they're going to be able to, you know, turn things around and maybe stay out in front for the rest of the season for the change.
Sure. What do you think has affected their form, though? I'm talking about Ulsan. Why are they dropping points? And also, what's going on with Jeonbuk? Where has their form come from?
Yeah, I think the break kind of, you know, did some strange things to these teams. And, you know, both teams, I think, had a few players to the national team, right, during the 4-match window. And some of the guys came back, and I don't know. I think they seem rejuvenated almost after the sort of the mediocre stretch to begin the season. Whereas Ulsan, like I said, they only had one loss before the break, and they were in a really good position to really kind of not seal the deal per se, but really put some distance between themselves and the rest of the pack. And the first match coming out of the break was against Jeonbuk, and they lost the game 3-1. And that was huge, I think, coming out of the break. And then they lost to Pohang, didn't score. Score ended up in a scoreless draw against Seongnam, the worst team in the league. So it was kind of, you know, things piling up one after the other after losing to Jeonbuk coming out of the break. So I think that was really big for them.
Well, I think the Ulsan fans will be perhaps dreading the second half of the season now. But hopefully, as you said, that dip in form has come early enough for them to try and rectify it. Let's move on to baseball now. In the KBO, the Kia Tigers have lost their best hitter, Socrates Brito, for up to a month with a broken nose. This has added insult to injury, or injury to insult, should we say, after Kia dropped 8 straight games to slip to 5th place, allowing the KT Wiz to leapfrog them into 4th place. Now, these two teams will meet for a 3-game set starting Tuesday. But first, Jiho, let's talk about Brito's injury. What can you tell us?
Yeah, this is really unfortunate for Brito. He was having such a great season in his first campaign in the KBO. He took a fastball by SS Shalander starter Kim Kwang-hyun right to the face during Saturday's game. He went down in immediate pain. He was taken to a local hospital out in Incheon, and he was diagnosed with a broken nose. And there's a really severe swelling around that area, so he actually has to wait another week before undergoing surgery, and he's going to be likely out until early August. And obviously, a massive loss for the Tigers. Brito was the KBO's Player of the Month in May. He had a productive June as well. He was the league leader in hits, triples, runs, total bases, and he was among the leaders in OPS and other categories as well. So simply put, he was one of the best hitters in the KBO period. And without him, Tigers lost Saturday's game. They lost again on Sunday. They've dropped now 7 in a row, actually, their season high. And they have fallen out of top 4 for the first time since May the 21st. Now, the KT Wiz, they've won 4 in a row to creep up to 4th place. And the timing is kind of, very, strange with two teams going in opposite directions. They're now going to play each other for three games starting Tuesday at Tigers' home in Gwangju. So very crucial series as the teams are getting ready for the All-Star break later this month.
Right, so a seven-game slide rather than an eight-game slide. Speaking of the break, the KBO announced today the starters for the All-Star game as voted on by fans. Who made the lineup this year?
Yeah, Kia Tigers starting pitcher Yang Hyun-jung. He led all players with a little over 1.4 million votes. He's actually one of nine members of the Tigers to be voted on to the starting lineup. They're joined by two players from the LG Twins and one from the Kiwoom Heroes. But let's talk about Yang. He becomes the first starting pitcher to lead All-Star voting since the pitching position was divided into starter, middle reliever, and closer back in 2013. And he's going to go up against fellow lefty Kim Kwang-hyun from the Landers. So the players from the Tigers, Dinos, Eagles, Heroes, and the Twins, they make up a Nanum team. And KT Wiz, Doosan Bears, Samsung Lions, Landers, and the Lotte Giants, players from these teams are members of the Dream Team. So a little bit more balance on the Dream Team side. They've got six players from the Lions, four from the Landers, and one each from the Wiz and the Giants, one of them including Ideho from Lotte, who is retiring after this season. He made the starting lineup for the 10th time in his career. So the game itself is July 16th at Chamjil Baseball Stadium in Seoul. This is going to be the first All-Star game in the KBO since 2019.
Yes, hopefully it'll be a fun game and further help boost the sport after a dismal few years. Let's finish with some volleyball news now. And unfortunately, this summer, there's been very little for fans to cheer about. The women's national team went winless in the Volleyball Women's Nations League tournament, including a chastening four-set loss to China on Sunday. So, Jiho, what's been going on here?
Yeah, you know, this is not the team that people saw at the Tokyo Olympics last summer. They went to the semifinals. No Kim Yang-kyung and no Yang Hyo-jin, among other veterans who have retired from international play. So, you know, this is a team that is still in transition, trying to get younger players, to start performing a little better. Obviously, at this point, they're not yet capable of putting up much of a fight at this level at the Nations League. They lost to China 3-1 in sets, dropped all 12 matches in the tournament, and they've managed to win only three sets in those 12 matches. So Nations League began in 2018, replacing the World League, and Korea is the first team to go an entire tournament without a victory or without a point, meaning they did not even force anybody to a five-set loss or either win or loss. So they ended up with 0 points. And again, winning just three sets of a tournament. They've got a new head coach in place, Cesar Hernandez Gonzalez, who is obviously still trying to figure out the team, but it did not help the team that he joined them very late because of his obligations with the club in Turkey. So did not have much time to work with some of the new players ahead of this tournament, had a few injuries to deal with, and some players even caught COVID-19 in the early stages of the tournament. So all in all, not an ideal situation, but I guess it's not the losses per se, but the way team lost some of the matches was, I think, very disappointing to fan base here.
Right. As you said, not an ideal situation, but still it's raising quite some alarm bells. We'll have to wrap it up there for Monday Sports Roundup. Jiho, thank you for those updates and we'll speak to you next week.
Okay, thanks for having me today.
I'm cellist Saul Daniel Kim, and you're now listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio.
We've come now to our closing segment, Morning Edition Preview, where we take a look at some interesting features and reports coming out in tomorrow's newspapers. And for that, we have our staff editor, Richard Larkin, joining us in the studio now. Richard, hello. It's good to see you.
Hello. Good to see you too.
Okay, so where are we headed to first?
First, we will look at the entertainment and arts section of the Korea Times. An article by Park Han-sol explains how a hand-woven vessel made by South Korean artist Jung Da-hae has become the first ever Korean piece to be awarded the prestigious Loewe Foundation Craft Prize this year.
Okay, so can you tell us more about this prestigious prize then?
Well, according to the article, the annual prize was launched in 2016 by Jonathan Anderson, the creative director of Spanish luxury fashion house Loewe. It aims to recognise working artists' contributions to bring in excellence, artistic merit and newness to modern craftsmanship. This year's event received more than 3,000 submissions around the world. 30 artists from different fields in 15 countries were chosen as finalists, including those from ceramics, textiles and leather. This year's shortlist included 7 Korean artists, which is the largest number ever for the prize.
Okay, so out of 3,000 submissions, a Korean artist won the final prize.
Right.
Let's talk more about Chung Dae-hye's prize-winning piece then. I believe it was made using a unique technique.
That's right. A Time of Sincerity, which the article says is a malleable yet surprisingly solid craft work, was made by using the centuries-old technique of making hats with horsehair. For the technique, fine strands of horsehair were interwoven into geometric patterns. The skill was used to weave noblemen's hats called gat during the Joseon Dynasty from 1392 to 1910. Now it is believed to be a forgotten technique with only a handful of artisans continuing the 500-year legacy.
Wow, and she used this to make a vessel as well rather than make it into a hat. So this is quite amazing. So what did Chung then say after winning the award?
Well, the 33-year-old said the horsehair weaving is one of the most ingenious and unique craft techniques of Korea, and said that she doesn't think of herself as working alone, but instead working alongside the long-standing tradition of fiber crafts. The artist added that she was exhilarated to see the centuries-old Korean technique getting due recognition for its superiority and long history by winning the prize. Chung was awarded around $52,000 and a bowl-shaped trophy designed by British silversmith Alex Brogdon. For people who are interested, all 30 shortlisted works are now on display in an exhibition at the Seoul Museum of Craft Art in Central Seoul through July.
Oh, interesting. So all these works are now in Seoul for people to look at, to enjoy and also celebrate the fact that it was a Korean artist who won this prestigious prize as well.
Yes, they are usually selected. Different cities are selected every year, and Seoul was actually this year's choice.
Okay. So for people interested, they can go check that out at the Seoul Museum of Craft Art, as you said. Let's move on to our second story. What do you have for us?
Well, next we will look at the business section of the Korea Herald. An article by Lee Sung-gu takes a look at the report by South Korea's National Police Agency showing plans to deploy robots, automated cars and exoskeleton suits to aid body movement by 2050.
Okay, sounds very futuristic. What can you tell us about this report?
According to the article, the report is called Police Future Vision 2050 and will use 5 key strategies and 14 projects to help the law enforcement agency adapt to the fast-changing security environments and technological advancements. One of the projects has been dubbed Iron Man Police. The agency is looking into developing wearable suits that increase officer strength and use of limbs. The article also states that canines will no longer be the only four-legged friends accompanying officers, as the police are looking to develop autonomous quadruped robots to patrol dangerous areas. Other autonomous technology, including patrol cars and urban air mobility patrol aircraft, will also look to be incorporated by 2027.
So when I said it sounds futuristic, it does sound very,
very
futuristic.
Yes.
It sounds like, I think most listeners will be thinking immediately of Robocop, especially with the idea of the Iron Man police.
I have seen many sci-fi movies, and I love this idea. It's very cool, written down on paper, but also a part of me is very scared of this technology.
Right, of course, yes, with a dystopian future that is shown on Robocop as well. But perhaps this sounds like a good idea. Might sound like an interesting idea, but I think cost will be a key factor in this. How will they be able to fund all this? That's probably going to be the biggest barrier for something like this. So I think that dystopian future is probably not on our doorsteps quite yet, but we'll see. We'll wrap it up there for Morning Edition Preview. Thank you for bringing us those stories, Richard, and we'll see you again next time.
Thank you. See you next time.
And that's where we wrap up our show for today as well. Thank you for staying with us. We'll be back same time tomorrow, so do join us again then to continue to get your daily dose of Korean news analysis. Till then, we hope you have a great day. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you as always for listening. Goodbye.